On this encore broadcast of Jazz Profiles, we'll hear about the life and music of gifted pianist Ellis Larkins. He passed away in 2002 at the age of 79.
Ellis is, without a doubt, one of the most marvelous pianists that ever touched a keyboard.
He plays pure piano, and he takes the classical touch and puts it into a very, very warm jazz sound.
My description of him is elegant, that he's an elegant piano player.
I think of Ellis Larkins as a musical rainbow. He's an impressionist, constantly weaving extremely colorful textures.
Heartfelt words of praise for a man who's been weaving a tapestry of music at his piano for more than 50 years. When you hear the warm, intimate sound he creates at the solo keyboard and his skilled accompaniment, you take notice. Yet this gentle musician, a New York City stalwart, who once cut a classic with Ella Fitzgerald, has never commanded a wide listening audience. Well, after hearing this Jazz Profiles tribute, you'll be wondering, how did I ever miss him? I'm Nancy Wilson. Stay with me as we honor an extraordinary pianist, Mr. Ellis Larkins. Jazz historian and pianist Dr. Billy Taylor first met Ellis Larkins back in the early 1940s, when both men were just beginning their careers. Even then, Taylor says, Ellis was setting high standards.
I think Ellis Larkin epitomizes the few musicians, and their number is much too small, who just on the strength of musicality and originality and certainly just creativity have won over audiences. There's no attempt to dazzle people or to blind them into submission. He reminds me in many ways of Billy Strayhorn and Jimmy Jones and a few other pianists of that time who really were just pure musicians. Whenever they sat down to the piano to play, you heard something very personal and you heard something unique.
Ellis Larkins was the coach for stage actress and singer Corinna Minetto when she began her career in the early 1950s.
He has an enormous hand, and he has the sense of the entire orchestra in his head. Ellis gets the rhythm going, plays the brass, plays the solos. He does the entire thing. And at the same time that he's doing that, he evokes sound out of a piano. He just makes it sing.
Ellis and my old friend, Joe Williams, worked together in the late 1960s.
If you can imagine somebody whose hands would stretch to what we call tense on the piano, with no effort at all, and his feeling of playing from the shoulders, as opposed to banging on the piano with your hands flying up and down.
He is a soft-spoken man who performs with regal style and grace. He sits at the piano with his back ramrod straight, knees positioned under the keyboard, his elbows close to his sides. He often hums to himself while he plays. Tall and thin as a rail, he's always well-dressed, usually in a tuxedo and starched ruffled shirt.
Although he sat very erectly, he was very relaxed.
Again, Billy Taylor.
I mean, you never got the feeling that he was straining, no matter what the tempo was or what the problem was. I mean, he just had everything was under control. He really was just there in a masterful way doing the job.
The musical colors Ellis Larkins draws on his black and white palette are pure expressions of the man he is inside, quiet, unassuming, unpretentious, and sensitive.
Ellis Larkins really knows how to be in the shadows. He's very, very quiet. He never speaks unless he's spoken to.
Ed Goldstein directs the Peabody Ragtime Ensemble in Baltimore, Maryland, Ellis's hometown.
He's not the type of person that's going to go out and pound the pavements and say, here, look, here I am. You know, he's very introverted. So a lot of folks haven't heard of him as a result of that. And that's a real shame.
He is a well-kept secret.
Bassist Keeter Betts has known Ellis Larkins for more than 25 years.
You can tell that he's very, very well-trained, very disciplined with his playing, and that's what makes him so unique. But he's a laid-back and withdrawn type of person. Compared to some of the other piano players, you know, it's almost like the squeaky wheel gets the oil, and he doesn't believe in squeaking.
Ellis Larkins is a gifted artist who tends to avoid the spotlight. Yet he will always be remembered for a classic recording he made with Ella Fitzgerald in 1950.
Soon or late, maybe, if you wait, maybe, some kind fate. Maybe we'll help you discover where to find your lover. You will hear you who he'll be near you. Paradise will open its gate, maybe soon, maybe. play.
Whether he's performing solo or accompanying singers, Ellis Larkins works the entire keyboard and imagines that he's an orchestra. But he never strays too far away from the melody.
You can't stress too much importance of the melody. Where is the melody? I tried to stay as close to that as I could.
Ellis Larkins, much more comfortable talking about music than he is about himself. When he speaks, he waves his hands through the air. It's as if he believes his hands describe his thoughts more clearly than words could ever say. It's NPR's Jazz Profiles, with a portrait of Ellis Larkins. I'm Nancy Wilson. On May 15, 1923, in Baltimore, Maryland, Ellis Lane Larkins was born to classical musicians. His mother was a pianist. His father worked as a janitor by day and was a concert violinist at night. Ellis was the oldest of their six children. He seemed to have the sharpest musical skills, particularly on piano.
Yeah, well, I was fortunate. As soon as my father realized that I was interested in piano, he started teaching me on the violin. So I went from that to the piano.
From the time four-year-old Ellis sat down to play the piano, his father insisted that the boy practice at least 2 hours a day. His father expected him to memorize the works of major European composers.
Classical music, naturally. Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, whatever, you know, all in that same school.
Gradually, young Ellis showed so much promise that he began accompanying his father at performances with the Baltimore City Colored Orchestra. And he was a finalist in several citywide music competitions. While still in high school, Ellis became the first black student admitted to the Peabody Institute of Music. It was the 1930s, and the school was segregated. So Ellis was only allowed to take evening classes.
When I went to Peabody, I was sent there by my teacher. I studied with the Italians and German, but wasn't treated any differently. They didn't show it to me, so I was fortunate that way.
As a teenager, Ellis kept himself busy with recitals at churches and schools around Baltimore. Once in a while, he'd stop by the Royal Theater to hear big bands led by Cab Calloway and Jimmy Lunsford. By the time he finished high school, he'd won a full scholarship to Juilliard School of Music, and off he went to New York City. The money didn't cover all of his expenses, so he found work in studios around Manhattan. By day, he studied European classical music, and he spent his evenings in the recording studios, drawing on his classical technique to play jazz and American popular song.
You're not supposed to use your touch in classical music just because you're playing jazz. I mean, you use your classical background to play jazz and enhances your jazz more so.
When he graduated from Juilliard in 1943, Ellis felt drawn to the world of jazz improvisation. He wanted to create his own sound rather than play music the way it was written on the page. But he was young, and there was still much to learn. His greatest inspiration was pianist Teddy Wilson.
The soft touch, and it was quiet playing. It was so melodic.
Thank you. Ellis was a new kid on the block, but producers had their eyes on him. He joined the Billy Moore Trio for a short tour, and he made his first recording with tenor saxophone legend Coleman Hawkins and drummer Max Roach in 1943. Even on this early recording, Ellis Larkins demonstrated that he could be a supportive musician who stays in the background, not overshadowing the soloist.
Lester Young, Coleman Hawkins, all of them, I had great respect for them and their playing.
In the early 1940s, Ellis got his first big break when he was hired to play at Manhattan's upscale club, Cafe Society. Billy Taylor was a newcomer on the New York jazz scene at the time.
He was really a young man, but he had already established himself as a person who was a formidable first-rate musician and who was doing things that I really aspired to do. In playing in Cafe Society, he had to play shows, he had to play for dancers, like Haitian dancers, and so he was playing different kinds of music, not just jazz, and he played it brilliantly. He always added, as good jazz musicians do, that special Ellis Larkin touch to whatever he was playing.
Over the next four decades, Ellis held court at several Manhattan nightclubs, including Cafe Society, the Blue Angel, Gregory's, and the Village Vanguard. Sometimes he led a trio, but most often he accompanied singers like Anita Ellis, Mildred Bailey, Herb Jeffries, and Joe Williams. He's also remembered for his solo performances at the Old Carnegie Tavern, just below Carnegie Hall. After working as an accompanist for so many years, performing alone proved to be a challenge, but it helped him to focus on the lyric or words of a song.
In knowing the lyric, it helped me to play solo piano so well because I could play according to the lyric, so as if I were a singer, you see. Or you just missed the voice at times, you know.
Billy Taylor, here's another side to Ellis's performance style.
I always thought of Ellis as an arranger pianist because he always managed to put his music into some context. I mean, it wasn't just somebody sitting at the piano jamming or just extemporaneously putting musical ideas together. His music always had a purpose. I mean, it had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And you didn't have to be musically trained to get the message. I mean, he played these lovely melodies. He had a great feeling for Broadway show tunes and some of the things that were popular back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Peter Betts was one of the many musicians who would leave the main stage of Carnegie Hall during intermission and slip into the downstairs tavern to hear Ellis Larkins play.
And I'd prop my bass up in the corner somewhere and just sit and listen to Ellis and watch him just playing wonderful, watching with his annex, you know, the little things that he does. Musicians and people used to just jam into the Carnegie place to hear Ellis.
Night after night, Ellis Larkins enchanted audiences, but not without a price. He often had to compete with noisy crowds who talked during his sets, people who weren't the least bit fazed by his unique artistry.
I know that it bugged him when he began to do solo work. The audiences were noisy in too many cases, and you'd go in to hear him play, and he would try to shut it out because he was very interested in playing music, and he wanted the music to sound a certain way. And in order for it to sound that way, he had to hear it.
Ellis had a simple technique for overcoming the noise. He ignored it, playing for the people who wanted to listen.
You're going to get a group that's going to talk through anything. I don't care who it is. You just ignore it. It bothers you at first, and after a while, you play to those you feel that they're listening to what you're doing. So it works out just as well. Most of the time, I enjoyed it.
Whether at the Carnegie Tavern or in other venues, Ellis Larkins constantly won over audiences.
He wasn't a person who relied on show business gimmicks or who did things to attract attention to himself. He did it all with music. He did it brilliantly with music because sometimes he would just play softer and softer, and the people would sort of began to realize that something musical is going on and I ought to really pay attention.
Ellis Larkins, performing his composition, Perfume and Rain. Although he's a highly respected solo performer, Ellis is best known as an accompanist. In a moment, we'll hear his classic recordings with singer Ella Fitzgerald. I'm Nancy Wilson. You're listening to Jazz Profiles, with a tribute to pianist Ellis Larkins, from NPR, National Public Radio. By the late 1940s, Ellis had earned a reputation as a talented soloist in New York. He'd been doing a lot of work in studios, live radio broadcast, and working with small bands. But he always made time to work with singers. He especially loved performances that featured just piano and voice. Ellis worked the entire keyboard, creating the sound of a full ensemble.
When you accompany a singer, they don't have the band with them, so you have to play as full as possible to make them feel as if they have a band with them, sort of playing full piano.
In 1950, a studio producer named Milt Gabler asked Ellis if he wanted to make a record with singer Ella Fitzgerald. Naturally, he jumped at the chance. But when Gabler asked about sidemen for the band, Ellis quickly vetoed that idea.
They asked me, did I want to record with Ella Fitzgerald? And I said, yes, I would. But I would like to just do it alone, just the piano alone, not with the band.
Ella and Ellis Larkins went into a New York recording studio and made Ella Sings Gershwin for the Decca label.
I could cry salty tears. Where have I been all these years? Little while, tell me now. How long has this been going on? There were chills up my spine and some thrills I can't define. Listen, sweet, I repeat, how long has this been going on?
This romantic recording of Ella Sings Gershwin was an instant hit. Some say it's one of her finest performances.
They were perfect as far as I could see, in every way.
Singer Joe Williams.
You could understand everything that she sang, what he played, supported what she sang, and like filling in places where the artist will breathe. It never, never intrudes. And you realize it takes real strength to be so reserved.
My one and only, what am I gonna do if you turn me down when I'm so crazy over you?
You have to have patience. That's the most important thing. It's patience with yourself, especially, not to get carried away. It's a tendency to go for yourself, you know, and you forget all about the other person.
He was responding to the kinds of things that she was singing and just almost instantly taking her somewhere else.
Jazz historian and pianist Dr. Billy Taylor.
There was a feeling of completeness. He left nothing to be desired, in my opinion, when he played for a singer. All of the things that are necessary melodically, harmonically, and rhythmically are here. Just listen.
And make us one, so my one and only. There isn't a reason why you should turn me down when I'm so crazy over you.
Technique and style Ellis uses when accompanying a vocalist are present here in this duet with trumpeter Ruby Brath. Like a singer, the trumpet offers one single note at a time, and Ellis fills the spaces with flowing rhythmic chords.
¶¶
When trumpeter Ruby Braff heard Ellis's collaborations with Ella Fitzgerald, he was inspired to work with him. Braff and Larkins made their first recordings in 1954, a collection of songs written by Rodgers and Hart. Ruby Braff.
I was very responsive to his playing because it was very so beautiful. It was such a complete orchestra by itself, you know.
We're both doing the same thing. We're both soloists, but I accompany him, actually.
Larkins never rehearsed. They had a strong bond built on their mutual love for the American popular song.
It isn't the kind of a thing where one person was dominating another. There was nothing like that. We were just having nice long conversations, you know.
Ruby Braff and Ellis Larkins, Slumming on Park Avenue, from a two-volume tribute to Irving Berlin, recorded in 1996, almost 20 years after their first project. It's NPR's Jazz Profiles. I'm Nancy Wilson. In addition to playing piano, Ellis Larkins loves to teach. Since the early 1950s, he's been taking time out to nurture young artists who had the skill and drive to learn music. One of his first students was stage actress and singer Corina Minetto.
I think he's an angel. What do I know? He's all music.
Corina and Ellis met in 1954 when she was fresh out of college looking for work. They both wound up with summer jobs at a theater in Massachusetts. She was young and had never heard of this distinguished musician who was about to accompany her.
And there was Ellis sitting at the piano with a straight back, looking very austere. And I put up my first piece, that's the only one I remember I did, When I Fall in Love. And he didn't say boo. But the funny thing of it was that I had never experienced anything like him before. He not only played like an angel, but he carried you, you know? He cushioned you. He caught you. He beat you to the place. It was a most amazing experience. He's just the absolute best. Absolute best.
Come spend this lazy afternoon with me.
Larkins and Minetto continue to work together. Here's their recording of Lazy Afternoon with Ron Carter on bass.
Come
Ellis Larkin, like so many musicians, especially African-American musicians, didn't fit any category.
Again, Billy Taylor.
He didn't play a whole lot of boogie-woogie. He didn't run up and down the keys. He didn't astound people with his wonderful technique, even though he had great technique. There were any number of people who emulated him. I'm always surprised that when people of that era are asked who their influences are, less people acknowledge his influence than I think should, because I know that he influenced a lot of folks. I can hear it in their work.
Like, as we've already said, that he's very, very quiet, a very modest type person. And you listen to him, he's not playing the piano, he's playing himself and coming through the piano.
Hasn't achieved the notoriety enjoyed by other influential musicians, Ellis's contribution to jazz is undeniable. He draws from the rich body of work created by the major innovators of our time and combines it with a European classical technique to create a distinct personal sound.
And Ellis has a very unique voicing.
Bassist Keeter Betts.
It stretches further than you know, than a lot of normal piano players. And you can hit a chord and you say to yourself, what note should I put there? You know, because it's so beautiful and you almost think, anything I put there would sound good, you know.
Joe Williams.
His gift is everything that he's done. Most people don't understand, though, how varied his gift is. He can write, he could arrange for a symphony. He wasn't given the opportunity to do these things.
He's one of the greatest that I've ever worked with. He's also one of the greatest that I've ever heard. I can't say he's the greatest I've ever talked to because we know he doesn't talk much. We use sign language more or less to a certain point. But you're going to have a heck of a conversation with him, you know, but in his own way. And you hear it when he plays.
In the 1980s, the Carnegie Tavern closed its doors. Most New York nightclubs started featuring blues, R&B, and rock music. So Ellis Larkins and his wife, Crystal, packed up and moved home to Baltimore. They live on a quiet street in a modest home. Their neighbors probably have no idea they live next door to a jazz legend. But Ellis prefers it that way, because it's the music that's most important.
The only thing I would say is that I was fortunate in working with good people, good musicians, and I feel honored to have been as young to have started with them and to have learned from them. That's all I have to say. I thank the Lord for it.
once told writer Nat Hentoff, "I have 88 keys. I give them love, and they give it back to me. And we are the fortunate ones, because Ellis Larkin shared his gift of love with all of us." Our tribute to Ellis Larkins was written and produced by Injamile Carol Jones. Post-production engineer, Stacy Abbott. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Assistant producer, Madeline Smith. Senior editor, Robert Rand. Our website coordinator is Patrick Breslin. The Vice President of Cultural Programming is Murray Horwitz. Special thanks to Lewis Hecht, Ellen Joy, James Diltz, the Institute for Jazz Studies at Rutgers University, the Peabody Conservatory, Ed Goldstein, and Crystal Brown Larkins. Thanks also to member stations KNPR and WJHU, Sean Finn, Rachel Day, and NPR's New York and Los Angeles bureaus. To email us, or for more information about this and other programs in our series, visit NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts and culture an active part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
You've been listening to an encore broadcast of Jazz Profiles. Pianist Ellis Larkins passed away in 2002 at the age of 79. Discover more great jazz at NPR Music, including our new series, Live at the Village Vanguard, live webcasts and archives from America's premier jazz club. Check it out at nprmusic.org.